Oh, Kathy, I didn't see you. Class for the kids. Well, we're in Daniel chapter 7. We're there last week, if I remember right. I'm getting that age where you don't need to ask me what I did yesterday. I might tell you 30 years ago, but not yesterday. Anybody there? Join the crowd. Well, I've had more people the last 6 months comment about my hair being white. I guess my hair turned gray a lot faster the last little while. Here we are. We're not talking about my hair. Daniel chapter 7. Last week we looked at the first 14 verses. We're going to review them very briefly. I've kind of got some little pop quiz there that we're not going to take a whole lot of time to dwell on, but Daniel chapter 7, the first 14 verses, begins with four beasts that Daniel sees in a vision coming out of the sea. What were the four beasts? Somebody named the first one. Lion. Lion was number one. Number two? Bear. Number three? Leopard. And number four? Bad boy. It wasn't given a name of an animal, but it said he was worse than all the rest, dreadfully so. So those are the four. We went on to see the Ancient of Days. Who is the Ancient of Days? God. And what was he doing? Setting up a throne by which to open the books and judge the world. And especially we see he judged the fourth beast. Who is the Son of Man? Jesus, right? And what was given to him? All authority, all dominion, that Jesus and the saints would rule and reign forever and ever and ever. Okay, so that's what Daniel saw. Now we're going to take up our reading from verse 15 of Daniel chapter 7. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. So here's what the one standing by said. Those great beasts, which are four, are four kings which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. And the ten horns, so he says, I want to know the truth about these things. The ten horns that were on its head, the other horns came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them, till the Ancient of Days came, and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and laws. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, and times, and half a time. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole earth shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. This is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. Well, we see a lot of unusual things in those verses, don't we? We see horns, multiple horns. We see horns that have eyes. We see beasts, look like a lion, looks like a bear, looks like a leopard, and one that's indescribable as far as what it looks like. You see, all of these things, and if you are expecting me to tell you precisely what each one of them mean this morning, you're going to be horribly disappointed, because I don't know. So how do we find out what they mean? How do we know what we're supposed to get from this? There are two radically different approaches to look at end time prophecies in the scriptures, particularly the book of Daniel and particularly the book of Revelation. And both of these approaches, you can probably guess what they are, symbolic and literal from my outline there. Some people lean toward using a symbolic approach to interpreting end time prophecies, and some people use a literal approach to interpret end time prophecies. And these are not hard, fast rules. They're intermingled a lot. But the important thing is that both of them are found within the church. And we're not talking about one of them is heresy. We're not talking about the other one being heresy. We're not talking about they're going to an extreme where if they take one step to the right, they'll be a heretic. We're not talking about any of that kind of stuff. They're both within the confines of the Christian community. And we need to remember that. Because I've had discussions with people before and kind of challenged their view of end times a little bit. And you can see their hackles get up. Like, if you challenge my view, you know, you're horrible. You're an unbeliever. You know, and maybe it's the way I challenge things. I don't know. That probably has something to do with it. But we're going to look at two different things here. All right? Now, before we get started doing that, I'll tell you a story. You need to listen carefully to the story, because my application of it to today's text is important for you to understand where I'm going from. Are you going to get mad at me? Y'all don't want to get mad at me, do you? All right. Susan and I have been married for 40 long time. 42 years, okay? Somebody mad already. Be 42 in August. I knew that. 42 years. We've been to Silver Dollar City 8 or 10 times in those 42 years. Most of them has been with kids. When you go there with kids, you spend all your time in line waiting for a ride. They have no interest in watching the guy blow the glass or the ladies making the quilts or whatever it is. A couple times we went by ourselves, and we would sit on the park bench out in the middle of the thoroughfare there and just watch people go by. That's pretty exciting when you're 60 years old. Watch people go by. Then we'd get us a funnel cake. Then we'd go watch the guy blow glass. Then we'd get us another funnel cake. Then we'd go watch the people make the funnel cakes. Then we get two funnel cakes. Right. So we're there, and one day we're walking down through there. There's a guy right in the middle of all these people, an artist, drawing. Pencil drawing people as they stop to get their picture drawn. And he was drawing caricatures. Did I say that word right? That is a word that my mind just has never been able to connect with my mouth. Okay, and I want to add about 2 syllables to it, so there's no telling how I'm going to say it if I repeat it. But he was drawing caricatures. Okay? And we watched him. Man, he's good. Now, a caricature, see, there's one of them, is something where an artist takes a person and takes some feature about them and exaggerates it or distorts it. You see, they do that with presidents a lot. Trump was a boy, they liked him, didn't they? Had a big orange cap bill for his hair there, and his lips stuck out, you know. They do everybody. So this guy's drawing this little girl a picture. And we're watching him, and he's really good. We watched him, and I asked Susan, I said, let's do that. Let's get him to get ours done. She said, no way. I said, why not? She said, I'm not doing it. And I said, let's do it. We'll get him done. I said, why not? She said, because I'll get mad. Okay? I'll get mad. And a day or two later, I figured I might have got mad too, you know, if he did mine. So We didn't do it. Now here's the deal. This morning, we've got these two schools of thought, symbolic and literal, of interpreting end time prophecy. I'm going to caricature those two things. I feel like the weakness that I see in each camp, I'm going to distort that weakness. I'm going to exaggerate that weakness. All right? And if you're in the symbolic camp and I exaggerate what I feel to be a weakness there, your hackles are going to want to come up. And those that are in the literal camp are going to be sitting over here going, tee-hee-hee-hee, you know, he's telling them. And then it's going to be the other way around. Okay, so nobody's going to get mad at me, right? All right. Maybe. Maybe. If you get, if you yourself get mad, just take some deep breaths, okay? All right, so let's start. I'm going to take the symbolic camp first. The symbolic view of looking at end time prophecy is mainly, at least in our day, seen in the amillennial view and the preterist view, perhaps somewhat with postmillennial. Postmillennial seems to be losing its zeal a little bit. But anyway, it's seen in these two camps. An amillennialist has never seen a symbol he didn't like. Likes them symbols, all right? But they tend to gloss over the fine details of the prophecy. You see a little diagram there of the symbolic millennialism of an amillennialist. You see the cross, Jesus died here. Go through a symbolic millennium, which they would say we are in today. And you get over there and see GT, that's real quick. I guess that means great tribulation, right? And then you've got the second coming and the last judgment. Easy. Easy diagram. Glosses over all of this stuff that is there. And if you get hung up and someone pins you down on some little detail, then just say it happened in 70 AD. Okay? All the famine we see in Revelation, 70 AD, when Titus destroyed Jerusalem. All the persecution, 70 AD. All the pestilence, 70 AD. All right? So what's all this stuff mean? You see these beasts? Bad. Beasts are bad. Okay? Horns are bad. 10 horns are bad. Just 8 horns. 8 horns are bad. Okay? Just all gloss all over it. You know, Jesus came. The millennium is spiritual. Get to the end, and we win. Okay? Does that sound like a caricature? Okay, good. All right, so there's that. 1,000 years, that means a long time. 800 years, that's a long time too. 7 years, you know, maybe a little shorter time, but it's just seven. 5, same thing, you know, no big deal. 4 beasts are bad. They're worse than 2 beasts, I guess. It really doesn't matter how many beasts. We're gonna go down through this rocky road, and someday in the end, we win. Okay, if you look on the back of the whole thing I've given you this morning, you'll see, you saw the diagram on the first page. On the back, there's an amillennial view right at the top with a little more detail. Now, compare those two right quick, and you'll see how much more detail there is. How much more is there? Not a lot, not much, right? You got the cross there. We're living in the present age. We are in the millennium now. Consummation is not yet. Christ returns. Hallelujah. Okay, so there it is. Amillennial view. Okay. Under that, we're going to take the literal view. The literal view is written, or the two diagrams right under the amillennial view. Now here's an important piece of information. Both of them are using the same data, right? They don't have different Bibles, right? Same Bible. Both of them have the same data. But you see how the amillennials narrow it down to just the basic couple things. Jesus died, we're in the millennium, Jesus is coming again. But the literal views, which I'm going to say are primarily seen in the dispensationalist camp, all right? They look at that detail pretty good. You can see all of that right here. You see that the middle graph, or the middle chart, you see on the left side of the church age and the cross, you see the rapture that comes. In between the rapture and Christ's return, you've got this tribulation, or it's also called Daniel's 70th week. Then you got the millennium, Satan loose in the eternal state. You can tell from the top graph and the second graph that they're designed by the same person. In fact, his name's in the corner, I believe. But you can tell by the, you know, especially down there on the right end, the eternal state thing, how there's a little arc around that. Those are by the same person who drew those. I don't know who he is. But there's so much detail here that I have blown up that tribulation time, and it's down below. You see my little red arrows kind of giving you an inset thing there of blowing that up. You see a whole lot more detail. Okay, both the amillennialist and the dispensationalist have the same data. But here is the difference in how they present it. An enormous amount of difference. Okay, and that's all we're going to talk about on those graphs probably. But the second group was the literalist group, represented by the dispensationalist. The dispensationalists never saw a symbol that they did like. Okay? In fact, they have a little saying that says this: when the plain sense of Scripture makes sense, seek no other sense, else you end up with nonsense. Okay? Cute little saying, isn't it? Real nice. Okay, look back in our text. Verse 17 and 18. Daniel has seen the vision. He's troubled in verse 15. And he asked one of those who stood nearby. Who are those who stood nearby? I don't have a clue, but I'm guessing that they're an angel. So I'm going to call them an angel. All right? So he asked this angel, what's going on? What does this mean? This angel answers him in two verses, 17 and 18. Let's read it. These great beasts, which are four kings which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. This angel is an amillennialist. He can explain all that in two verses. The beasts are bad, and God wins. Okay? Daniel, however, is a pre-tribulational, pre-millennium rapture guy. He says in verse 19, then I wish to know the truth about the fourth beast. Okay, you tell me what that is. I want to know about this fourth beast. I want to know about those 10 horns. I want to know about that one horn that came and had eyes. What does that mean? I want to know about why that one horn dislodged and subdued three other horns. I want to know about all this stuff that's there. Now, the dispensationalist, the back diagram that we looked at a while ago, that is a representation, I believe, we could say, of a pre-tribulation, premillennial, pre-tribulation rapture, premillennialist person. All right? Now, I'm going to distort two things about that person. Y'all ready for that? The first one is this. That some of them are members of the We're Out of Here Club. Okay? What is the We're Out of Here Club? Well, it goes like this. You can discuss, and I've done this before and heard it done lots of times. Heard these comments. You can be discussing how bad things are getting. Well, it looks like that the world's headed the wrong direction. Looks like things are really getting bad. Looks like they may start persecuting Christians in America. And what if, you can discuss and you can imagine, and what if the day comes when they won't let us have any food? What if the day comes when they come to my house and take me and chop my head off right in front of my wife? What if the day comes when they come to my house and abuse my wife right in front of my eyes and then poke my eyes out? And sooner or later, somebody's going to say, well, before that happens, I'm out of here. Right? We're just going to sing I'll Fly Away every Sunday and everything will be good. Listen to me. Are you listening? We could go to a multitude of places in this world today where scenes just like I imagined have happened last week. You hear that? Last week. We could go to some other country where they happened, something similar to that happened the week before last. You can go all over this world and see things happening to Christians because they are Christians that in America we say, we're out of here before that happens. Go tell that to them. This kind of thinking works best in America. This kind of theology you won't find in many persecuted countries. The second weakness that I see in this view is what I'm calling, this is my term, reverse interpretation. What I mean by that is you can see it in the evolution and creation debate. 150 years ago, people could read Genesis, the first 11 chapters of Genesis, and take it to mean that God created the earth in 24-hour days, six of them. They could take it to mean when God said, let there be light, there was light. They could take it to mean when God created man and looked at him and said it was good, and his creation was good, and there was no death, no sin. They can take that at face value. That's the way it was. But beginning nowadays, about 100 years ago, when the theory of evolution came along, the Christian community became intimidated by science. We hear all the time, follow the science, follow the science. That's the modern battle cry with the corona stuff. Follow the science. And yet the assumptions, and I'm not going to dive very deep into this, but the assumptions behind the theory of evolution are about as unscientific as you can get. The assumptions that they make to date fossils, they would not take those, make those assumptions and stand by them and declare things to be like they do with evolution. Reverse interpretation. We see something outside the scriptures that intimidates us, that we think we have to believe, that we think is true, and we go back and reread the scriptures and reinterpret the scriptures to make the scriptures fit with that. Everybody following? And the thing of end times prophecy, here's how that works. We hear this guy or somebody called the Antichrist. And every time a bad guy comes on the scene in the world somewhere, somebody begins to wonder, is this the Antichrist? You ever done that? I have, every time a bad guy comes on the scene. Okay? We wonder, is it that guy? We read this number, 666. That's the number of the beast or the number of the Antichrist or the number of somebody. And we think, what does that mean? That gives us a clue as to who this is. It's kind of the same way. We see somebody on the scene in modern times and we try to figure out how he is 666. So we take all kinds of mathematical gyrations to figure this out. The letter A is 6. This is one of them. Letter A is 6. Letter B is 12. Letter C is 18. Letter D is 24. And then you take their name, find the numbers that correspond, add them all up, and see if you get 666. As if God did that to work with the English alphabet. All right? With the English alphabet. All right? I've heard it done with Nero. I've heard it done with Adolf Hitler. I've heard it done with Henry Kissinger. I've heard it done with Barack Obama. I've heard it done with Saddam Hussein. All of these things, I don't know if they ever figured out a formula. You let every letter be 4.57 or something, maybe it'll work out. Or maybe you leave out his middle initial, or maybe you add his middle initial, something to make it work. But we're taking what is and trying to make the Bible fit what is to figure out some things. 10 toes. We saw 10 toes back in Daniel chapter 2. Later on, there are 2 witnesses in the book of Revelation. We see the mark of the beast. People try to figure out the 10 toes. Very popular thing there 50 years ago or so was when the European Union, I think, was established. There were 10 nations. Well, it wasn't long, or a few years later, now they added one. So there's 11. So that messed that up. Okay, so our reverse interpretation has to be redone. All right? The mark of the beast. Boy, I remember when barcodes first came out on stuff. People began to think that might be the mark of the beast. Well, we've got pretty well used to the mark, haven't we? Okay, you can't buy anything without scanning that dude, and we just go right along with it. Okay? Maybe that ain't the mark of the beast. I remember going to the fair or the movie. They stamp your hand. I don't know what stamp says. Come again or whatever. Stamp your hand. Why do they do that? So if you need to leave for some reason, you get back in, right? And I look at that, and I don't think that's the mark of the beast. I didn't think it was then, but I think that may be what it's like. Maybe they put a stamp on it. You can't wash off. Now, this was 50 years ago when I was a kid. Then they got these, the little more high-tech stuff came along. Now we know that they have people going around with microchips under their skin, on their hand. I don't know if anybody got it in their forehead or not, but they're the microchip. I've heard one of the latest ones, that's the vaccine. You're not going to be able to buy or sell or do anything unless you've had the COVID vaccine. Maybe that's the mark of the beast. I don't know. But to me, that is a glaring weakness of a dispensationalist view. Now, let me hasten to say that I think it's probably pretty safe to say that all dispensationalists are probably pre-trib, rapture, premillennial adherents. But everyone that is a pre-trib, premill person does not necessarily fall into a dispensational camp. Because dispensationalist is much more than just this end-time prophecy stuff. All right? So not everyone fits that all of those things. But here, we see I've given you these 2 views. All right? A dispensationalist, never seen a symbol they did lie. They don't like simple. Everything has to be able to be explained. Now, this book, Daniel, the last 7 chapters we talked about, had a lot of visions about end times prophecies. A lot of them line up. They're very similar to things that you can find in the book of Revelation. So there has to be this parallel study going on as we do that. We're not going to dive into all this stuff in detail, or we'd be here for the rest of the decade. All right, so we're till the rapture. Yeah, we'll be here till the rapture. All right, which might be next week. Who knows, All right, but I want to give you my thoughts. You see on that second page, my thoughts as of today. Next week, I may think something different. Who knows? Here are my thoughts. We've talked about the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had in Daniel chapter 2. He saw an image that had a head of gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, and feet and toes of a mixture of iron and clay. And it's been suggested by a lot of people who are commentators and scholars that that image and that vision that Nebuchadnezzar had is a similar or a parallel vision to what Daniel just had in chapter 7. We talked a little bit about that last week. Now, whether they are or not, I'm not dogmatic in saying that. But here's what I do say. The Daniel chapter 2, Daniel told the king, that head of gold is you. Daniel told the king that the next part of that image is another kingdom that will come after you. That the next part of that image is another kingdom that will come after that second one. And that the next one is one that will come after that. And we see in Nebuchadnezzar's vision that God, with a great stone in the vision it was, destroyed that last kingdom. And you can see, if you read, compare those two visions, you can see that both of them involve judgment from God at the end. And that God's kingdom is then established with His people, with His Son, forever and ever and ever in both of them. Now, whether or not they are similar or the same, I'm not prepared to be dogmatic about that, but I do know they're similar. Okay, so that's one thing of where I am at. The second thing that is interesting to me is down there the time and times and half a time in verse 25 in our text today, where he says this little horn that grows up and speaks pompous words and all these things, he'll persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and laws. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. Everyone that I have read after interprets those words time and times and half a time as time is 1 year, times is 2 years, half a time is half a year. So you add that together, you get 3.5 years. Okay? Whether or not that's dogmatically so, I ain't going to die about it. You know, it's not a hill I want to die on. But you can read, and I've got the verses here in this one sentence here. Three passages in Revelation. Revelation 11:2 says that this man or this person will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. That's 3.5 years. Treading under feet, you see in Revelation 11. We saw here this little horn will trample under feet God's people and the things that he's trying to destroy. Revelation chapter 12:6 talks about this woman that flees to the wilderness to hide from someone trying to kill her, to persecute her for 1,260 days. They used a 360-day calendar. That's 3.5 years. In Revelation chapter 3, you see this beast with the mouth speaking great things. Does that sound familiar to Daniel 7? Yes, we see that there. Speaks great things, and he was given authority or allowed to do his thing for 42 months. So there's, in my mind, there's definitely a connection between what we see in Daniel 7 and what we see in those three accounts in Revelation. And if you read the context of both of them, don't read the context trying to figure out all the details. Just look for things that are similar. They have in common. Maybe a little different approach or different perspective, but it's amazing how many things you'll find that those two things have in common. Now here, it's the rest of this is my thoughts too. I believe, just like in verse 21, I believe that the enemies of Christ, we see in verse 21, the same horn making war with the saints. Now, I'm not saying this represents anything, but I'm saying that there are people out there in the world, a lot of people. People who are in places of power. People who are aggressive and angry and that hate God and that hate Christ, that are making war with the saints right now. Right now. They are many. They are making war with us now. I believe that right now they are prevailing over God's people. I believe that they will prevail unless or until God directly intervenes. I doubt that God is going to rescue a nation, as in the United States of America, that is filled with lukewarm churches that give lip service to God, but whose hearts worship their own pleasure. I think Trump had a rally last night, didn't he? Okay, I listened to about 5 minutes of it. You know, pretty much the same thing you heard, you know, during his presidential campaign. Right? As always, there's hundreds and thousands of people at the rally, it appeared to be. It's like it always was. And I would like to think, in fact, I do believe, that there are a lot of people in this country that, to some degree, are morally pretty much good people. I believe that, as me and Cerise were talking a while back, she made the comment, there are more of us than there are of them. I agree with that, in a way. Let me ask you something. All those thousands of people that were at Trump's rally last night, where do you think they're at today? What percentage of them do you think are in church? Now, I know they went to a rally last night. But what about next Sunday? What about the next Sunday? Okay? I doubt if it's 30% of them. But let's say half. Half of them are there. What percentage of that half do you think are the men, the fathers, are spiritually leading their homes? Not many. Not many. I told you this statistic one time that I figured up for myself. I know I've told you this, but let me tell you again. One day, 20 years ago, I stopped and went back and wrote down the names. Me and Susan grew up in church together. At the time, we were both about 13 or so. Wrote down the names of all the kids was in our youth group that came to church there. Ended up with 40 kids. This was just right down the road here at Palestine Baptist Church. 40 kids that we went to church with that were there every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, and most of them on Wednesday night. 40 kids. That was my criteria. Their parents regularly had them in church. Now I stopped and went through that list to see how many of them are doing at least that same thing with their kids. Or today. Some of them weren't married at the time. Out of 40, you know how many it was? Five. Me and Susan, my two sisters, and somebody else. 5 out of 40. If that's a standard that just coming to church regularly produces, what happens to the next generation? This country is filled with people. Lots of them. They like Trump, they like the flag, they like a strong defense, they like all these things that I like. But as far as a heart that really loves God, no. I'm not sure that God is impressed with their spiritual walk. In fact, I'm pretty sure He isn't. I suspect that the church, the Christian church, will undergo immense and accelerating persecution that will expose within the church the wheats and the tares. You'll see that because when things get tough, somebody who is just there because they got friends there, or they're just there so that because they've got a business, they want to meet new people. They're not there for that kind of stuff. They didn't sign on for that, and they'll be gone. And that will be the case, I believe, until the Ancient of Days, as we see in the Scripture, comes and gives possession of the earth to His Son and to His saints. I believe that if America is spared for the present time, it will only come by the Spirit of God, moving upon men and women on a grand scale and giving them a broken heart and repentant spirit. I do not believe that we're going to change this nation by the political process. I don't. I think we're going to have to see a great awakening where people are truly broken and truly humbled. And that's something I can't persuade them to do. And you can't. It's not going to happen. Only God can change their hearts. It's like depending upon the political process to fix all this, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a gangrene limb. It doesn't look pretty for very long. I believe that our country in the world, and now listen to this, has become a reprobate place. Our country is a reprobate society. That no political process or amoral laws, which is a nonsensical term. There is no such thing as an amoral law. I know you've heard the expression, you can't legislate morality. I'm telling you, there's nothing else you do legislate but morality. Every law has a moral undergirding. You cannot legislate morality to a reprobate person. We cannot depend on that to effectively govern our nation or sustain a nation, a civilized society. I believe that attempts to govern a reprobate people is akin to trying to tame a rabid dog. If the Republicans win both houses, and they reverse some of these things that Biden reversed and all this kind of stuff, repeat all this process, and they do something that we would consider, that I would consider good and right, and I say, hallelujah, amen, good, I'm glad it happened. I can see some places where because of that decision, because of that law, because of that executive order, streets are on fire. Can you see that? Every time the good folks, the conservative people, the righteous people do something in our nation, something burns. Is that sustaining a civilized society? No. I suspect it will be that way forever, unless God intervenes with a large-scale revival in the hearts of people, reprobate people. In the midst of all that, I think we are still called to be salt of this earth. It is the Christian worldview, and it is living Christian lives that God has ordained to preserve a civilized nation. I mentioned last week, I think, in my sermon that a nation can be obtained through war. It can only be kept by righteousness. That's where we are. We are still called to be righteous, to be salt and light in this earth. We're still called to be a light that God would use. We see here in Daniel 7. Four beasts, whoever they are, whatever they are, whenever they were, that their mission is to control. They're coming forth from a troubled sea, which is a troubled world. A sin-filled world from day one is a troubled world. We see not long after the fall in the garden, we see one brother killing another brother. And the world has been a troubled place, a stirred up, chaotic, chaos place from that time till now. And there are always people who want to control. They want control. Sometimes on a larger scale than we might ever could imagine. Somewhere in there, in all this process, we are living. We are here. I am a Christian. Ought to look like it. Ought to act like it. It ought to rub off on somebody in a positive way. Same with you. Does it? We're called to do that till He comes. Let's pray.